Hello, everybody, and welcome to yet another episode of the How's My Hand Path podcast. This week, it's going to be just me and Matty Ice. Matty boy, how are you doing?
I'm good.
So Brandon, unfortunately, had to bow out of this one for some personal matters. He's leaving for a vacation in 2 days. First time with the family. I got to assume there's a lot of, anxiety, nerves, excitement going on. So he hasn't had an opportunity to bring his kids anywhere since they've been born because of COVID. So I'm assuming that a lot of his like nighttime stuff right now is going through the planning of all that. So unfortunately, he cannot make it with us. But me and Matt got a whole wide range of fun stuff to talk about. The story of the week is slow play. And I had to say that really slowly, slow play, because everywhere on the internet, everywhere you go, every meme account is basically Patrick Cantlay videos. It is all over the internet. He was blasted by announcers. He was questioned about it. We're going to get into all of that. So, Matt, I'll let you introduce everything, share your thoughts, and jump right in.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what I think is it's like a double whammy. I mean, he was egregiously slow at the Masters. He backed up the last pairing, and then at the RBC Heritage again. I've seen some stuff. I'm not sure how accurate it is, but he's taking between a minute and a half and almost 3 minutes.
Okay, so I know exactly which video you're referring to. The video of like the guy in the audience who's holding his phone up and he's timing it. So the video starts with the guy looking at the clock on his iPhone, and it's at a minute and a half. And then by the time Patrick hits a shot, I think it gets to 2:50. So at the minimum, he's at a 1:20. And you can only imagine that obviously it took a little longer than that. Don't get me wrong. Patrick is an incredible player. I'm not trying to downplay him, but that is slow. That is like unbelievable.
Well, look, I mean, it's kind of the whole, it's kind of like the whole Patrick Reed thing. Again, I'm not a huge fan of him as a character in the game of golf, but a lot of people say that he cheats, or could say takes advantage of the rules. But if they're not going to enforce the rules, then why not take advantage, right? Like, there is a slow play policy in the PGA, and it's up to a 2-stroke penalty. And it's supposed to be 70 seconds. But I mean, I can only remember one time I've actually seen that penalty handed out.
First of all, the last time I remember someone actually getting penalized for slow play, wasn't it like that kid at the Masters? Do you remember the 14-year-old who was like on the cut line?
Guan Tian Lang
or something like that.
Yeah.
I apologize if I'm butchering his name. He was like in contention on the cut, like the weirdest situation, like the young kid, you have all this marketing opportunity. He's on the cut line and you're penalizing him for the slow play. I was like, I couldn't believe what was just so out of touch about when to apply that penalty and when not to,
Well, I mean, again, like I think it comes up a lot. I know I poked around a little bit. I can't quite say I did some research that would be, but I poked around a little bit. What I think is, so the USGA a couple years ago spent a whole bunch of money and they did a whole bunch of research on it and looked at over 20,000 rounds that they had on the books to try to figure out what is slow play? What does it do? How does it back it up? And essentially what they came up with is that it creates a traffic jam, because we all know we've all played public courses with, 8 minute splits on the tee sheet. So what they figured out is that you need a minimum 11-minute split on the tee sheet for twosomes, and you need a 16-minute split for threesomes. And that, in theory, you should take about 40 seconds per shot.
Now, did they specify if this 40 seconds is at the moment you arrive at the golf ball, at the moment your routine starts?
Like, no, I mean, again, like, about it? I could deep dive. They just said that's kind of what the ideal would be. Like, I think what they kind of figured out was what would basically keep the pace of play going all day with a packed tee sheet.
But right.
I mean, you don't have to look at the numbers to know that that's not what's happening.
I mean, at the minimum, he was already at 80 seconds in that video, one video alone. And I mean, how many videos have we seen of like comparing him. Did you see the one of like, there's the Happy Gilmore one of like, he learned how to bounce the shot off the wall and it gets in the hole before he actually hits his tee shot or hits like that 4-footer on the green. I mean, it's no, it's like, look, no matter how talented of a golfer he is, which obviously he's an amazing golfer. I mean, he's top 10
incredible,
in the world,
incredible like, golfer,
incredible golfer. He is very clearly just too slow over the ball. I think like there at this point, no amount of questioning can get him out of it. Like there's no excuse involved. I mean,
it seems like a mental routine almost on his part, you know?
Right. Well, like, I saw one video that came out of somebody was walking. I'm assuming it was him. And like somebody in the crowd yells out and the caddy turns around and is like, dude, fuck you or something. Yeah. Like points the finger to the guy.
Yeah.
I feel bad for the caddy too, because the caddy's sitting there with a top 10 player in the world making a shit ton of money, but then he has to like deal with all these fucking hecklers. Cause like, what is he going to do? You know, he's not going to sit there and be like, hey bud, you want to hurry the fuck up?
So here's a question. If you're a commissioner for a day.
Yeah.
And slow play is the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say the sponsors call you up and say, hey, commish, it's taken away from the quality of the competition. What do you do? What do you think? What do you think is the solution?
I mean, I think it comes back down to exactly what you said, which is unless a rule is enforced, nothing is ever going to change. I mean, I don't think you need to do anything. Like, this is the thing. I'm seeing so many different tweets about like, oh, why don't we implement this? Why don't you, like, you don't have to implement this fucking shot clock. Like, you see who's going too slow. Let's just start. Rather than going from 0 to 100 with this whole rule situation, why don't we just fucking apply the rule to the guy who's very obviously taking way too long? And this is no shot at Patrick. Like, he's not the only slowest person. He's in the spotlight way more often because he's so talented that he's in the top 10 of the leaderboard.
Oh, he's not the only one. And again,
and don't get me wrong. Like, this is not I cannot stress enough. He is in front of TV cameras way more often because of how good he is. But there are a shit ton of guys that are slow, really slow on the PGA Tour.
Come on. I mean, Jordan Spieth isn't exactly a fast guy.
So here's my point, even relating to Jordan, right? Like, if you are seeing, I think context is involved too. Like, if it's the last couple of holes of a tournament, the guy's trying to win the tournament, like, who gives a shit? Let them take their fucking time. There's millions of dollars on the line.
If you're on the deck and it's a par three and the wind is blowing and the cut lines up
there are certain situations.
Sure.
But okay, so here's my point too, though. This is exactly why I don't like the idea of enforcing a shot clock. Is like, that shot clock is way too objective and taking out way too many different subjective situations where you can allow players a little bit more time. But on a Thursday in clear skies and the guy is behind a tree and it's like the 13th hole and he's one under and he's taking 7 years to figure out how to hit his second shot, like, buddy, let's hurry it up a little bit. Maybe then we should start enforcing some rules. At the minimum, first time is a warning. Second time is a two-shot penalty or a one-shot penalty or however you want to do it. Because fines don't matter either, in my opinion, because the guy's going to look at a $5,000 fine who's made $8 million this year and being like, fuck you, I'm going to lose less money taking my time than I will.
Well, like, that's the thing. I mean, you know? Again, but you know, what's to be said for, because again, it's a sport, right? It's like, you know, basketball or football or hockey, the skill of being able to walk up to a situation, making a decision, pulling a club, figuring out the plan and pulling the trigger. That's a skill, right?
Mm-hmm.
You should be rewarded for that skill.
And here's the thing. Like, when I'm saying like there are certain contexts where you shouldn't apply it, I'm not saying every single situation because the wind's blowing. Like, I'm referring to literally specific elements where you have a guy on the cut line. Maybe it's a good storyline, or you have a guy like the last 3-4 holes of the tournament. If the guy's taking an extra 30 seconds per shot, it's totally fine if he's in contention. But like the Thursday, Friday, let's be a little bit more diligent. Let's be a little bit more intense about enforcing the rules. And especially when it's like you got guys who are consistently doing this week in, week out, you already know where you need to start maybe giving a little bit of a kick in the ass to the rules officials of being like, hey, buddy, like, this is notoriously a fucking slow group. Maybe let's keep an eye on these guys versus like the 3 fastest players on the PGA Tour. Like, we don't really need to be stressing about what they're doing because we know they're not going to be slow, you know?
Right. But the problem is that in the bigger context is that it creates congestion, right? Think of the Masters, like, you know, Brooks and Rahm. I mean, you know, they were 13 T. They waited what, 9-10 minutes?
There is no doubt in my mind that slowing down that much on every single tee box at the Masters affected Brooks. And I'm not saying he would have won the tournament, but dude, it might have affected Rom too, to be honest. Like,
sure.
You're standing. Apparently, they waited something like 97 minutes or something that I read the course of the round.
Yeah.
An hour and a half sitting down in 18 holes. Are you fucking kidding me?
And they're playing in pairs.
Yeah, like, what is going on here? And the worst part is they were so far away from everybody else. They were the only two guys with a chance to win the tournament. How are they the faster ones on the golf course? How are they waiting for you when they're the only fucking two players who can win the tournament? Like, what is going on here?
But think of this. If you're a stakeholder, if you're a sponsor, or if you're, you know, the broadcaster, I mean, it takes away from the entertainment value, you know?
Oh, there's no doubt in my mind. If I'm a tournament sponsor and I'm seeing a guy stand over a ball for 3 minutes, I'm being like, yo, let's hurry the fuck. And don't get me wrong. It has a ripple effect too that people aren't realizing.
Well, that's just it.
Like, it's not just him taking a long time. It's people are standing around getting antsy. It's TV announcers have to find a way to fucking talk for 3 minutes with nothing going on. Like, this is just going to snowball further and further back and make things so much worse as a product, which is something that obviously you always stress about is the product of the PGA Tour.
Well, because that's what it is, right? I mean, that's what's driving the game. That's what drives the manufacturers. That's what drives, you know, the whole industry. Like, it's you know, it's a big meta, you know, thing. Like,
it's funny because, like, I'm always stuck on both sides of it. Like, I work with some guys who are obviously extremely talented and tend to be a little bit of slower players. Then I work with guys who are super fast golfers and they're always bitching about the other golfers, you know? So it's like, I have to sit there and hear both. I personally am a little bit of a faster player. I think us in general as a group, we're pretty much...
We're typically pretty fast. But, yeah, you know, we don't exactly play for...
I mean, no offense to Brandon, but when Brandon's taking his time, it's usually because he's reloading off a tee box or something. But
fair.
Usually, I think in general, like, we don't really spend that much time. Now, granted, we're not playing for millions of dollars. I know that's going to be a very easy cop-out
right,
thing to say,
right.
But
even at that, like even if you take it to the amateur level, like the weekend warrior level, I mean, we've all been to that course where the tee times are just squished together. Like, you're on the second hole and then that
okay.
That
so is that a shot? Is that a player's taking too much time problem, or is that a tee sheet problem? Because that sounds to me like a tee sheet problem.
Well, it's typically most public courses, that's a tee sheet problem, right? Like, that's just them trying to make, you know,
For all the listeners out there, like, I don't know how it is in other areas. In Quebec, they're fucking jamming you 8 minutes of tee time. Some courses, it's like crazy.
Oh yeah, I mean, you're behind the clock on the second tee box.
Yeah,
like horrible. it's crazy, you know. And whatever, it is what it is, I guess. I mean, that's kind of the...
Okay, so here is my suggestion, and I'm not even saying it's a good one, and it's coming with very little research, so please don't harp on me if you're listening to this, but why not implement a shot clock that's a little bit more strict, let's say the 40 seconds per shot on Thursday and Friday, and then you get to the weekend where it becomes a little bit more important and just increase the fucking shot clock by 10, 15, 20 seconds. Whereas, you know, everybody's playing. Everybody's got to play in 40 seconds. We've got 156 golfers on the course, 144, whatever the tournament is. They vary. You get to the weekend rounds. There's 70 guys, 60 guys on the golf course. Everybody's got 15 more seconds per shot. You got 55 seconds. Figure out your fucking situation. Like, you cannot be taking so long. Under the context where, you know, again, last couple holes of the tournament, you can be maybe a little bit more lenient on it. But, like, something's got to change, in my opinion. And I don't think you can do it equal for over the course of the whole tournament. I know some people are going to say you certainly can. And, like, part of the skill set of this game is establishing what to do under pressure in a short amount of time. But that would be my suggestion.
If not,
you penalize them. Penalize them one shot right off the bat. It doesn't need to be two. I think two is a little too aggressive. Like, yo, I took 15 extra seconds over the course of 18.
Well, as per the actual rule, right. As per the actual rule, if on the third offense in one round, you get DQ'd.
Okay. So here is part of my problem with the rulings that are currently written. Number one, I think you're giving a player too many warnings before you start to penalize them. Okay. Like, by the, you know, three, I can understand, like, the third one you're DQ'd, but, like, that's three warnings. Okay. Number two, I think that the rulings are so harsh so fast that it makes rules officials scared to do it. Like, do you imagine you being a rules official? Like, do you want to be the guy who's, like, walking up to fucking whoever tour player that's standing there, like Xander Schauffele on the 13th hole on the Friday when he's on the cut number, and you got to be like, yo, you're too slow, buddy. Sorry, I got to give you a two-shot penalty. You're missing the fucking cut. Like, two shots is a lot, man. That is literally make or break for some players, missing the cut, making hundreds of thousands of dollars. Like, it's a massive amount. You penalize them one shot, I almost think that they would be much more likely to give it to them because one shot is easily salvageable. Two shots is a lot. And because the penalty is so harsh, it makes it harder for the tour official to want to give the fucking penalty in the first place.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm swearing way too much. I'm sorry, but I just get heated about this shit.
I don't know. I mean, I think the more that I think about it, the more that I think it's convoluted. Like for starters, I think the PGA is a players union, right? Like they should call each other out. Like there's this,
I mean, it's starting to happen. I mean, I've seen more complaints about slow play in the last,
well, again,
36 hours, 48 hours than I've seen in a long time.
Right. But was it 3 or 4 weeks ago when they called out Max Homa for taking long on the, when he was lining up his putts, and then he came back on
Didn't he actually come out and be like, yo, I'm sorry, I am taking a little long.
Yep.
All the respect to Max, by the way, he literally just came out and was like, 100%. And was like, yo, I'm sorry, I'm actually going to start to try to be a little speed.
Yeah,
it up.
Yeah. He's like, I'm going to try to speed it up. But I mean, I think exactly.
But then like, Patrick's standing there, and with all due respect to Patrick, like he's just standing there and been like, oh, everybody's taking slow. It's like, well, dude, we have you on video like 7 times taking a little too long. Like, I'm sorry.
Well, I looked it up somewhere. There's I'm not sure which website it is, but someone went on ShotLink and like added up the times between his shots. It's egregious.
It's got to be brutal.
It's egregious. But I mean, I think that it's kind of a complicated issue in the sense that, you know, it's a players union, so they have to be for enforcing the rule. Ultimately, is where it really comes down to, and there's so many things. It's like example. It's like you'll watch a tournament and you'll have that one guy who keeps calling a rules official over. Like, how many times can you call a they know the rules. They're in the PGA.
I'm sorry, working with tour players, I can assure you that's not always the case.
Well, that should be on them. Like, that's not...
And don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to defend them. I'm saying that a lot of times the rules can be so, like, there's so many gray areas with a lot of the rules because they're so fucking complicated. Even a tour player is unsure about certain things and they have to call the rules official.
Okay, fair. Agreed that there's a certain chunk of the rules that apply to the course, the playing field, which is can be complicated to interpret because they're always different, right?
Okay, so here is different. Okay, so I'm going to play devil's advocate about the rule situation a little bit. The tour player in many of those situations, I'm not going to say all by any means, but in many of those situations, is trying to call a rules official in, not because he doesn't know the rule or she doesn't know the rule, but because they are trying to find a way to gain an advantage and seeing if the rules official is going to cave. That's really
right,
the lie's a little iffy. My feet are a little slippery. I can maybe extend my setup position a little further away from the ball than I normally would because now my feet are grazing gravel.
I think we've all seen.
Like there's a lot of manipulation on the tour players.
Yeah.
From what I've seen and just from my own personal experience of knowing these guys, where they're trying to gain an advantage. They're not doing it always. Like there are some cases where the rules are very dicey and they're calling it in for a reasonable purpose. But a lot of times it's like, hey, I might as well try. Why not try? Hey, how about this? What if we call a rules official in 3 times? If 3 times we're refused, we get a penalty. Like you can do that too. Right.
Yeah, sure.
Why aren't we penalizing these guys for calling the rules official in to try to gain an advantage too many times and constantly getting rejected? At some point, it's like, hey, buddy, like you're literally on my list as the most rules official call in person trying to gain an advantage and getting refused. At some point, I got to start stopping you from doing it.
Yeah, but it was like Bryson a couple years ago at Jack's tournament at the Memorial where he just kept.
What had happened?
Yeah, he hit a. There was a few incidents where he called the rules official over and it was kind of sorted out. But then on this one hole, he hit a drive next to a fence, like a chain link fence. And the rules official was like, no, like you can stand, you can reach the ball with your club. You're just not pointing. Like he wasn't basically pointing in the right direction. And Bryson was trying to argue that it was, I'm not exactly sure what his angle was, but you know, he asked for a second rules official, then the second one came over, and then he asked for a third, and then the third one came over, and you're just like, come on, like, you know, like I don't remember who his playing partner was, but you know, he wasted
First of all, I feel like we almost might have talked about this in another episode, but to me, you call the first rules official in, they say no, that's where it ends. You shouldn't have the ability to contact the second person. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
The first person said no, that's the end of your line. In an NHL game, if the first ref refuses you, it's over. The game continues. You don't have the ability. You don't have the ability to wave your hands in the air and be like, "Stop the game. Let me go ask another ref what they think." Like,
well, I think
sorry.
That's the thing too. Like in other sports too. Like we've all gotten used to having bad calls, right? Like it's part of the game.
Human error has always been part of sports, and I'm not saying that the rules official's wrong. In many cases, it's the tour player that's wrong. I mean, human error is part of sports on the player side just as much as on the ref side. Why is a player getting penalties in an NHL game? Because that's human error. You made a poor decision in many cases, right? Mm-hmm. Why is it that the professional hockey player is allowed to make a human error, but the referee is not? Why is that the case?
Yeah. I mean, that's just it. I mean, I guess it comes down to, you know, to the product that they put out there. And if it keeps, you know, people keep buying it.
I think the tour tries way too hard to protect their players and not enough to protect the system and the product.
Well, that's what I was.
I think that's what it really comes down to.
No, I agree. I agree 100%. I mean, when Liv and other iterations of different tours started coming up a couple years ago and eventually turned into what we have now. I mean, I was hoping that it would, and it has. I mean, it's spurned the PGA to try to create more tangible with the limited fields and, you know, the new kind of the way they're going to do the FedEx Cup. Like they're headed in the right direction. I hope it seems like they're trying, but that being said, I mean, Rory didn't even show up at the RBC Heritage this week, you know?
Yeah. I'm assuming that's your leeway into talking about Rory at the Heritage.
And I love Rory. I'm a huge, huge fan.
I mean, I'm gonna preface this by saying like Matt is one of the biggest Rory fans. Like he's like on his list, loves the guy, always.
And I hope that he comes out in the next few days and he says that it's a serious, it's an issue, it's a family issue, it's something. I hope it's a really legitimate
thing. Matt wrote in our group chat literally like the ebbs and flows of emotions that come with watching Rory play around at the Masters is basically unmatched. You want him to do well there so bad. To win that Grand Slam.
It's just the Masters, man. It's just the Masters. He needs to win the Masters.
Yeah. So let's talk about that then. What are your thoughts on? Well, first of all, how about we talk about just in general, like what are the thoughts of an elevated event being the week right after the Masters? And I know that like John Rahm went, I get it, but early thoughts on all of that?
Well, look, I mean, again, here's my big thing. Okay. Like, you know, we have golf adjacent employment. We're not pros, but these guys are playing golf. Like going to the Heritage Classic, it's Sea Island. It's not, you know.
I mean, if we're gonna play, I guess if we're gonna play one, I'll play both sides of it, and I'm sure you will too. But like,
right?
If we're defending the tour, I mean, it's an East Coast event. It's literally an hour flight, probably from where Rory lives, or like an hour and a half flight from where Rory lives. Could have been in and out of there in 2 seconds if he wanted to. Then again, probably wouldn't go there and like just show up on the Wednesday night to play the tournament. It's like,
no, I know, but think of this. Like he skipped the Maui tournament.
Right.
Right.
He's done that. I think he's done that every single year, hasn't he?
Right. But this year, because of the elevated events, they only get to skip so many. So he skipped the Maui event. So now he kind of has to play the Heritage.
Like he lost $3 million or something.
Yeah. Two or three. Anyways, he lost pit money for it. And I know again.
So here's another thing. He's not losing. Fair enough. He's not losing money out of his bank account. He's losing potential future earnings based on a system that the tour created as free money, basically for these guys.
Right. Right. I mean, he's got more money than God. So I don't think, but again, he doesn't strike me as someone who deeply, deeply is motivated by money, but.
I mean, he's not. Didn't he come out like a couple of years ago and was like, yo, I have this huge house and I literally live in like four rooms. I mean, you know, the guy doesn't need money. Let's be very clear. And so I don't think that $3 million means anything.
But I don't think he's incredibly motivated by it at this point in his career. And I think that, you know, I think that he, and again, this is outside looking in. I'm not part of the PGA, but he is somewhat owed a debt of gratitude towards the other players for kind of being the Jay Monahan. I mean, the whole Liv thing came out and Jay Monahan didn't even barely had a press conference. He barely made himself heard on like what the plan was going to be and what the, you know, kind of retooling the product and Rory basically, you know, showed up and had these super honest, earnest conversations with the press. And every time he'd show up anywhere, he would have these long, you know, these long briefings with everybody and just kind of explain kind of his take. And he kind of became the figurehead of the union. And, that's huge. And that was, and I guess like, I think that means a lot to him, and I think that's great. And again, like, I don't know why he didn't show up. He hasn't really said anything official, but,
I mean, I'm going to be completely honest. Like, my personal opinion, I don't give two shits that he didn't go. I'm not offended that he didn't go. No, I don't care that he didn't go. I think the rule of needing to play a certain amount of elevated events is stupid. I think Rory is your biggest name on that tour. He's been the most biggest defendant of the tour. He could have easily jumped ship if he wanted to, and probably was offered a fuckload of money. And now the one event he skips the week after the most important week of his year, every year, mm-hmm. they're going to come out and like fucking bash him publicly. I don't know. And I'm going to be honest. I'm happy that he didn't go. Like, who cares, man? It's a fucking heritage event.
Fair enough. I just think that the fallout a little bit is kind of like leading by example for the other guys, the other top 50 guys.
Leading by example. He led by example when he stayed on the tour and he came out with his press conference and defended the fucking tour.
Fair enough.
He's literally the face of the PGA Tour.
Yep. Although, think of this. I kind of wanted to see him play at Sea Island because I think it fits his game.
Oh, don't get me wrong. Like, I know Rory's golf swing inside and out. I mean, I've used it as a model for many of my own students. Like, he's got a lot of good in that game, and he would have probably competed and played well. But at the same time, like, why does he have to be at the, why does he have to be at the Heritage? Why is there even an elevated event the week after the Masters? I love how like well, I saw. I think, yeah, I saw I think, okay, so I saw a tweet. I think it might have been yesterday, or maybe it was this morning, where it was like, oh, the Heritage broke its viewership record, you know, for the first time in 10 years. Well, like, yeah, no shit. It's the first time it's an elevated event, and it's the week after the Masters. Obviously, it's going to break its viewership record. Plus, you had Jordan Spieth in contention. Like, let's break it down to the reality where if you had two unknown guys in contention in that week, would you have broken the viewership record? Probably not. But you have Matt Fitzpatrick, who's a top 10, top 15 player in the world. You have Jordan Spieth, who's the golden boy of you know, the PGA on the American side. Like, of course you're going to break the viewership record. Put all that package together, it's almost a guarantee.
Yeah, it was good TV.
It was good TV, but at the same time, like, it was also lucky that it ended up being that way.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, but that's sports, right? I mean, that's...
No, of course. I'm not trying to downplay that. I'm just saying, like...
And no, I mean, I'm not personally, you know, look, I would have liked to have seen Rory there just because I think it's a course that fits his game when he's playing well. I just think that, you know, as far as carrying the water for Jay Monahan, I mean, I think it wasn't a great look for him as a leader to not show up. I understand what some critics are saying with that. I don't personally take it. Like, I don't think any less of Rory. I love Rory. I hate talking bad about him. It's killing me inside right now. But, you know, I guess it happened. I mean, we have to talk about it, right?
Yeah, I just I know what tour players go through with these rigorous schedules, and like for a guy like him, I can only imagine what he tends to prioritize. That he probably looked at that schedule, he probably looked at that event on the calendar, and it was the first fucking thing he X'd out at the start of the year. You know?
Yeah, and again, you know, he's got LA Country Club this year and Liverpool, right? I think Liverpool's got a big old red circle on it for him.
You're talking about the Open?
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. So I'm gonna be so fun fact, I'm actually going to the UK. For the listeners out there, I'm getting married this year. We're going to the UK for our honeymoon, and I'm actually going to be spending 1 week at the Scottish Open. Not the whole week, but I'm going to be working with Yannick that week because he's playing the Open the following week.
Wait. You're going to work on your honeymoon?
I'm going to work 2-3 days before my honeymoon officially starts. I'm going to the UK because I need to see Yannick that week, and then we actually are going to do like a whole trip of Europe after that. And we're
busy. Could he potentially qualify for the championship?
Oh, he's already in the Open. He's already in the field.
In the Scottish?
And no, and the Open Championship. Oh, nice. He's in the British Open too.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, I'm in the ticket pool.
For the Open.
Yeah.
Well, that week will be the week of my honeymoon that I will not want to be spending on the golf course.
Well, fair enough. Let's
put it that way. Yeah, so that's gonna be exciting too. LA Country Club, that's gonna be sweet for the US.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think the qualifying for the US Open starts too, like this week or next week or something. I think it's coming up soon, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's split over 2 weekends for the first round.
Yeah, every year it's the same thing. It's like I start out with like 100 guys entering the local qualifying. I don't even know what leaderboard to look at because you have so many different people trying to get in, and then it comes down to like 10% of them make it to regionals, and then you look at the regionals, and then it's such an exciting process, even as the coach, because obviously it's like such a major accomplishment too.
I mean, I've for those who know me, I mean, I love the Masters, but you know, the US Open and the Open Championship, to me, just the whole thing is just so much more exciting.
I mean, I was at the US Open with Yannick last year, and let me tell you, it was an exciting week, man. Brookline was crazy.
Yeah.
That was really cool. Okay. Let's jump into some Champions Tour and LPGA talk, because
little news on the Champions Tour this
little
week.
News. So news came out on the Champions Tour, I believe yesterday, although I only saw it this morning, or I saw it yesterday.
Well, I have the official release here by the PGA Tour of Champions.
Okay. So talk about the release and then I'll share my thoughts.
Okay. Well, the PGA Tour of Champions and sports events and marketing company Intersport announced on Monday that the first World Championship Cup will be held December 7th to 10th at the Concessions Golf Club in Florida. The competition, chaired by Peter Jacobson, brings together teams from the Ryder Cup and President's Cup with six-man squads representing the U.S., Europe, and international. Jim Furyk will be captaining America. Irishman Darren Clark leads Europe. And South African Ernie Els will helm the internationals.
So basically, it is three six-man teams on the Champions Tour, kind of like a Ryder Cup format from my understanding. How are they going to play this three ways? Is it going to be like a pool situation, like the two best teams of the pool end up facing each other, like in Sunday singles or something?
I would assume that it'll be some sort of a bracket set up, and they'll probably do a best ball, and then they'll probably do like an four-man
shot. Yeah.
Yeah. And then they'll probably end up with singles. It'll probably just keep score like they do with the Ryder.
I mean, so two automatic spots on each team. All three captains will play. Okay. Yeah, So, it makes sense though.
Yeah.
So you have basically three automatic qualifiers, one of which is already established, plus I guess three captains picks from the three captains. So I worked with Darren for a year. Love the dude. One of the nicest guys out there. Deserves all the credit in the world. I'm happy that he was chosen to be captain just because of his incredible resume over his career. Ernie Els, I mean, man, South Africans have a tendency of staying with South Africans. You have to assume like Retief Goosen is going to be on that team.
Easy.
Right. I mean, Retief is a guaranteed lock on that team.
Of course. Yeah.
You have to think of like a Vijay might be on one of the teams. Right. So like, you know, I work with Stephen Ames. Right. So like for me, I see this come out and it's like, wow. Okay. So Stephen finished eighth on the points list last year, or maybe even seventh.
He's up there on the Schwab standings.
Well, so he's top 10 in Schwab Cup this year, finished top 10 Schwab Cup last year, has two Champions Tour event wins in the last five years.
Unless there's a complete meltdown, then he's on the team.
Well, so here's another thing, though. Like, if we're talking purely from a performance standpoint, I think Stephen Ames is undoubtedly a top 10 player on the Champions Tour over the last couple of years. Okay, he has proven it with his ball striking. He has proven it with his results. He is super consistent on that tour. He's still one of the better players. He can win any single week. And he's, again, an elite ball striker. So are you thinking like alternate shot? Like, he is your guy, right? He hits fairways and greens. That's what he does for a living.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, there's a lot of politics involved. And if I look back at a guy like Stephen Ames' career, he was very rarely, if ever, I don't even think he's ever been chosen for a
President's Cup.
President's Cup. I mean, the guy won the Good players. Question. He won the Players' Championship and wasn't on the President's Cup. Like, think about that, right? So you're talking about a guy who won, I don't know, four or five times on the PGA Tour, was never once chosen for a President's Cup. How many fucking international good players are there, man? Every single time I see the President's Cup show up, no offense, the international team is significantly weaker than the U.S. every year. They stand virtually no chance.
Well, in the last like almost 20 years, yeah.
Yeah, and the bottom four or five guys on that team sometimes don't even have a win internationally. So it's like they're like 60th, 70th in the world type players. So you're talking about a guy who, I have all the love in the world for Stephen. Like, he's my student. You know, I've been working with him for 4.5 years. He has every right. He deserves to be on that team. And I'm going to say that publicly. Like, he does. Performance-wise, he absolutely does. Will he be chosen? I don't know. We'll see. You know, like I said, there's a lot of politics involved.
But. And full disclosure, I don't follow the senior tour very much, the Tour of Champions, the Champions Tour. And I'm not, obviously there's politics involved and there's sponsorship money and there's, you know, there's powers at work. I don't quite get their whole, I'm just not up to date on like all the going on.
Okay. So here I'll say two things and it'll lead into the question that I think you're getting at. So the first part is like, you know, first of all, when do they, did they announce when the players are going to be automatically qualified? Like when that system is chosen and stuff? Is there any extra details? I guess they just announced it, so there's probably not that much to.
Yeah, the only thing that I can find is they're just saying that the final spots will be based on the point standings, and then there's a captain's pick, and then the captains are playing. So figure what they'll take three, maybe two or three players for each team that are in the rankings, I guess.
I mean, I would only assume that if, I mean, not assume, if he qualifies, I'm obviously going to go down there. That would be fun, even just as a fan to watch. Because I'm a big Champions Tour guy. I mean, I've worked with numerous players on that tour. So
I just love match play. I mean, I think match play is the funnest.
I think it's actually going to be a good product. Now, whether it deserves to be a product or not, I think that's a different conversation altogether. I do believe it will be a good product. I would love to go as a coach for Steven and participate in it. And I think that would be super exciting.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, you know, it kind of leads to the follow-up, which is what you're saying, which is like, you don't read too much into the Champions Tour. You know, how, like, was this event even necessary? Like, that's the first question we need to ask. Like, why, do you think this event even came to be?
Well, I would assume it's sponsorship driven, like most events in golf.
Right. So you think that like some people just threw a boatload of money and is like, hey, fuck guys, come on.
Well, I think somewhere along the way, you know, you had the sponsors that were saying, you know, let's create an event with more visibility, you know, towards the end of the year, when, you know, whatever they figured out was a good place to, like, you know, get some eyeballs, and
basically in a dead zone in December when no one's playing.
Something. And they, you know, they probably put some thought into it, and they figured out what it was, and they scraped up some sponsors that were interested to
You said, I mean, you said it's literally in the announcement. It says PGA Tour Champions and marketing and sports event company Intersport. Mm-hmm. So obviously there's clearly some backing coming on from Intersport who wanted to create this event, I would assume.
And Intersport, I believe, it's a European conglomerate of retailers and
that part I'm not aware of. So
I think that's who they are. I mean, I could be wrong, but I would assume it's sponsorship driven. I mean, I can't imagine that it's not.
Okay, so is this tournament necessary in your opinion?
I mean,
I think your lack of response kind of says it on its own.
Well, necessary. You know? I don't know if it's not necessary, but like, other than like,
is it merited? How about that? That's a better question.
I mean, I think if a company like Intersport, and again, I'm not in the business, and this is my opinion. Mm-hmm. I think a company like Intersport, if they want bang for their buck and they want to touch golf and they want to touch that demographic, if it comes down to the demographic that watches the Champions Tour over, say, I don't know, the LPGA, then yeah, go with the Tour of Champions. But as I was looking up the numbers, the LPGA's numbers, viewership worldwide, dwarf the Tour of Champions.
Okay, and we're going to jump into this conversation, because I guess where you're going with this is the PGA Tour champions have purses that are bigger than the LPGA Tour.
About double on average.
They have half the amount of players in the events. They're three-day events, which means less people can actually go and watch the tournaments, less TV money, but yet the purses are double. It also means, it's an event, you know, the PGA Tour champions, let's be real, for the most part, I'm not going to say it's always the case, because you get a bunch of journeymen who like qualify for the Champions Tour who didn't really have careers on the PGA Tour, but a lot of the PGA Tour champions members are guys who have made significant boatloads of money already on the PGA Tour prior to going to the senior circuit. And so I guess the question is, like, why do you think, I mean, man, there's going to be people who are going to be in their car right now, and the first fucking thing they're going to say is like, yo, fuck the LPGA, or, oh, it's all about more eyes equals more money. That just means that there's more eyes on the Champions Tour. First of all, that's not the case. I mean, you're literally proving that it's not the case. There are more eyes on the LPGA. So already by definition, that argument goes out the window.
And it's not
figuratively total, and literally for you in the car.
But on top of that, it's not even total eyes. It's eyes per event. Because there's way more LPGA events than senior tour.
So you're talking, even proportionally speaking, like there are more people who are going to tune in to an LPGA tour round of golf on TV.
And get this. The LPGA is showed in over 170 countries.
Okay, so here is the thing, right? Why, like, in your mind, should those numbers be flipped in terms of the purses?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I can't say yes or no to that question, but I do. I often ask myself, why is it that the LPGA, the average purse at an LPGA event is around $2 million US, right?
Right.
I don't understand. I fail to see.
It's crazy to me when you look at like the money list leaderboard every year on the LPGA tour, and you're like, how are we 30 events in and like top 10 have barely scraped $1 million? Like it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I think the average top 10 earnings is just shy of $2 million a year.
And that's at the end of the year, to bear just shy of 2 million. And these are the top 10, right? The Champions Tour, I mean, fuck, dude, all of them are hitting 2 million.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Right. And again, and you know what? And maybe some people have watched some LPGA events and they just don't like it. I personally, more often than not, short of a handful of men's tournaments, prefer watching the LPGA. I find it more compelling. I find their shot making, their accuracy is miles better than most pro men.
Well, let's talk about it. Okay. So I work with players on the Champions Tour and I work with players on the LPGA Tour. I'm not going to say that LPGA Tour players are better ball strikers than Champions Tour players. I'm not going to say the inverse either. I think that the LPGA Tour is a better product. I think that you need to promote women a lot more than they're currently doing. I personally think that PGA Tour champions players earn too much money, if I'm being completely honest. And I work with these fucking players. I would assume
it's a ratio of the money they get for sponsorship, right?
But this is my point, is that I think that they're, regardless of how that money ends up on the purse and in the players' pockets, I think it's too high on one side and not nearly high enough on the other side.
Yep, I agree.
I mean, dude, we had Annie Park come in when I was working with her over the winter, and you saw her fucking ball striking, dude. Like, she hits 50 drives in a row and one of them goes 20 feet offline. Like, these girls are unbelievable.
They're so good. They're so good.
They're fucking unbelievable.
They're so good. They're so efficient in their golf swing. It's bananas.
And to be honest, I don't know, dude. Like, I look at the Champions Tour and it's like, you got these no-cut events, you got guys earning crazy amounts of money, and then you got these LPGA girls that are finishing 70th on the money list, and they're barely making fucking 200 grand at the end of the year. You're like, what? How is it possible that somebody can retain status on the LPGA Tour at the end of the year, meaning she finished high enough on the money list and barely made enough to make a living? This is the best circuit for women on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
How can they barely make enough to sustain a living?
Tell you what, I'm on the LPGA.
By the way, tennis majors, men and women make the same amount of money. How about we fucking do the same thing in golf?
Take a while. So here's a question. So in a $2 million purse, T20, what do you think you get at T20?
$20 million purse?
It's a $2 million purse and an LPGA.
You finish
top 20. So you finish 20th. Guess what the payout is.
You finished 20th. $2 million event. I'm trying to think of the European Tour, because the European Tour purses on the smaller events are about $2 million. I'm going to guess 20th. You're making somewhere around like 30 to 45K.
$23,000.
I wasn't too far off. I said 30. $23,000. Yeah, that's terrible. Right.
Okay, so you're traveling.
Mm-hmm.
You've got maybe a coach.
By the way, lest we forget that the LPGA Tour is predominantly an international tour. Like, they play a shit ton of events outside of the US too. So travel is actually increasingly more expensive than the PGA Tour.
Oh yeah. I mean, but
PGA Tour champions. Like, that's my point.
Yeah. Anyways, I mean, I don't know. I'm a fan of the
By the LPGA. Way, $23,000. I mean, first of all, top 20 means you beat out like 70% of the field. Top 20, and you're giving your caddy money, you're paying for the hotel, you're paying for travel, you're paying for food for the week.
10th place finish, $41,000.
Okay, so you now beat out 85% of the field. You finished in 10th place, arguably more than that, like 90% of the field, if not more.
Yep.
I don't know where I came up with 15%. That was stupid. 150 players in the field, 10th place. I mean, you're beating 93% of the field. So, you're beating 93% of the field. And you're basically walking away at the end of the week with like $25,000, which is or let's say maximum 30,000. Like, that's ridiculous.
Yep. And if you finish, you finish fifth, let's say you finish alone fifth, 84,000.
So in the elevate, so just to put things into perspective, and I'm not comparing the men and the women, but the men in the elevated events who finished T41 were making $100,000.
Yeah.
T41. Basically, you barely made the cut, played half ass all week, and like beat
you crack,
out like
you, in the LPGA, you crack $100,000 at fourth.
Yeah. You're that 84,000 for the top five. I mean, you're basically making that if you just made the cut in those elevated events on tour.
And if you win 300K.
And again, I'm not comparing the men and the women. Like, it's not the same. I get it. It's fine. But don't tell me that the LPGA tour deserves less money than the Champions Tour.
Well, again, like, you know, I'm not an expert when it comes to TV ratings and viewership and stuff, but I looked at the numbers. Their viewership is, it's more. It's a lot more.
I mean, it's an argument that, like, I can see so many people bringing in so many different sides of it. And I am in the middle of working with players on both ends. I just don't think the Champions Tour should be making the kind of money they're making. I don't think the LPGA should be making the kind of money they're making. Mm-hmm. At the minimum, those numbers should be the same. And I don't even think that's the case. I think it should be more for the LPGA. But at the bare minimum, those numbers should be the same. I cannot believe that the Champions
Tour... Look, it says it right here. The LPGA Golf Channel viewership, just the Golf Channel viewership, is higher than both Champions Tour and Korn Ferry together.
So a lot of people are going to make the arguments of like, oh, when they're airing on TV makes a difference. Yo, like, half the fucking LPGA events are overseas and they're happening in the middle of the fucking night over here. Excuse my language.
I mean, again, they're putting the asses in the seats, right?
I would love to see women make more money. You know, if the PGA Tour has shown anything, because the PGA Tour runs the show at the end of the day for all these associations.
Yeah, they drive. They're the big, yeah.
Yeah, they're the mother company of all this, right? So yeah. At the end of the day, the PGA Tour has shown us that they have more money than they let on. Because the second the LIV Tour was created, the PGA Tour was like, hey, it's yeah. a me, extra money. And yeah. let's just throw these at the players.
Yeah, they moved a few things around.
So they played around with their books and they manipulated the finances in a way where they can now give tour players 3, 4, 5 times the amount of money that they were giving them 2 years ago. You're telling me that you couldn't invest 10% of that money into the LPGA Tour? Why?
I think it's weird. And again, I just think it would probably help legitimize the skill and the game and the competition if they did.
I just think it doesn't, like, even if the, first of all, the elevated events in some of these cases are making more than the fucking LIV Tour now. Like, it's crazy, mm-hmm. right? So like,
yep.
how is it possible that you were able to elevate your status literally on par with the LIV, but you couldn't elevate it to like 90% of the LIV, which would still be more than enough for these tour players to be happy? And then sure. shove the extra 10% into the LPGA else.
But this is kind of my gripe. And again, like, full disclosure, I've caught flack for this for years because I've been saying this for years. But the average purse for the Champions Tour is $4 million US.
By the way, that is higher than not only the LPGA but the European Tour as well.
You know,
the European Tour, which is supposed to be the international competitor for the PGA Tour, which has basically become a sister feeder tour at this point for how much, like, this fucking LIV situation has changed everything.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to stay on the European Tour anymore. Everybody wants to leave and come to the PGA because they're making the Japanese ISPS Honda event that's happening this week is a $2 million purse. Okay. So equal to the LPGA. The PGA Tour events that are happening, the one that just happened at the Heritage was what, $18, $20 million? It's 10 times the amount.
20. But I think
why would you want to stay on the European Tour? They're no longer equals. It was not that they were ever equals, but it's not even comparable. It's not even like you're saying they're making 60, 70% of the money. They're literally making 10% of it. It's become the Korn Ferry Tour to the PGA as much as anything else.
Yeah, but I think it's crazy that the DP Tour is not, like, the purses are so small. Like, I just, it's insane.
I mean, what's insane is that you keep going this route and the European Tour is going to die off.
It's going to die off. Totally. It will definitely become like a feeder tour.
I mean, it's already kind of leading in that direction. The elevated events, don't get me wrong, fucking A, tour players make more money, coaches make more money. That makes us more money. I'm not complaining.
Sure.
But it has created three tours, a three-tour system. It has created elevated PGA Tour, regular PGA Tour, and then everybody else into one pocket of feeding into the PGA Tour. And that includes the Korn Ferry, the European, all of that is feeding into the same fucking system now.
And not that I think it's ideal, but if they would have overtly made it so that you could churn the top talent from DP and Korn Ferry into the PGA at a higher frequency, then I would get it. I would understand. I wouldn't agree with it, but I would understand. But it doesn't, the churning isn't that much anyways. Like, it's not... Like, where do you have to finish top what in the DP Tour to get a card?
10.
Yeah.
Top 10. And I don't even know that it's top 10 who don't already have a card. I think it might also just be top 10, but don't quote me on that.
And Korn Ferry, there's a few different ways through Korn Ferry, I think.
Now it's just top 30. I mean, that's it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it's a product. I mean, we'll assume that they know what they're doing, obviously more than me anyways.
I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, a lot of our arguments obviously don't have amazing foundations to them. We're just going based off what we know. But at the same time, as somebody who has a lot of heavy interest in the game for a variety of reasons, I would just love to see, number one, the European Tour. Well, not number one, but just in general, the European Tour sustain its tour a lot better than it's currently doing. I would love to see the LPGA Tour make way more money because it's rightfully deserved for the women. I would love to see the Champions Tour not become the holy grail. I mean, they're the second highest earning tour on the planet. How is that possible?
I think that's the crazy thing. I don't think there's no room for the Champions Tour. There definitely is room for it.
Do you understand that a $4 million purse is the second highest purse on the planet internationally right now? It's the PGA Tour Champions. It is a 60 person, no cut event for 3 days.
Yeah.
Okay. And it involves half of that tour involves players who have made at least $20 million in their life already.
Yep.
What?
No, it's something.
And again, you can understand, like, I'm coming from a point of view where I work with these guys and like it directly affects me too. So my opinion, if anything, is even more important because it's like, hey, I'm actually not in agreement necessarily with the fact that it's the second highest paying tour. I don't believe it should be. I literally don't. Which is crazy to say publicly because, like I said, I work with these guys, but fuck it. Fuck that.
You're getting bold. We're just a couple of guys who like golf, so let's not...
Let's talk. Let's end this with Montreal golf season. What are you foreseeing ahead?
That it starts soon, I hope. I've actually got a round on Thursday.
Where at?
Of course, on the South Shore, or shall remain nameless.
So we played our first round last week with the staff at Nakhchivani Golf. So me, Brandon, and two of our coaches.
It's crazy. It's crazy that I wasn't invited.
Yeah, I'm sorry, dude. It was exclusive event for the coaches. I mean, I'll tell you what, dude, we got there. It was okay. So I guess for Americans, it was like 85, 90 all week. Okay. So it was like 25, 30 degrees all week. It was like super warm up until the morning we had our tee time where it dropped down to like 40 Fahrenheit or like 35 Fahrenheit. It was super cold and it was blowing like 30 miles an hour. It was the most miserable first 9 holes of our lives. Everybody was freezing. We were like, basically like we decided to walk the course too. Cause we're like, the cart is just going to make the wind blow even more. Cause the carts didn't have the plastic covers in front. And, it was a trek, but honestly, it felt really good.
Was it fun?
Yeah. Super enjoyable. I mean, we had a good time. We were laughing a lot and stuff, but, a lot of routine going on from the boys. So,
oh, clearly.
Yeah, of course. First round of the year. I mean, what do you expect? Clearly. but we're looking forward to playing some golf. We're going to get out together too.
Of course. Clearly.
Yeah, it's gonna be.
We got to go for the annual birthday round.
The annual birthday round. Me, you, my brother, and my father. That's gonna be a good one. All right. I think we can end it there, unless you have any final thoughts that you would like to share.
No. I think that's about it for this week. There's not too much else I think that's pertinent to bring up.
Okay, so I guess that we'll end it on like what I never actually asked you, so we're going to run back to this.
Sure.
Would be your solution to the slow play? We kind of skipped ahead and didn't really dive into what you would do, so I would like to hear that.
I don't know. I mean, I've seen a few hot takes that I think are just funny. I don't think they're practical, but I think they're
feel funny. Feel free to share.
Well, I've seen a few things that, like there's someone on Twitter, I believe, who said that you should put the entire field on the clock.
Okay.
And if the field as a whole goes over the clock, they all get DQ'd and the purse gets carried over to the next week.
That's like the most ridiculous, obscene thing that would never happen, but also kind of low-key funny, you know?
Wouldn't that be funny? Yeah. No, I think what it really comes down to is that realistically, I think if the players called each other out more and they showed enough humility to like be responsible for the product, because ultimately like the product is what pays them these ungodly amounts of money. And, you know, the PGA Tour as a governing body hasn't really empowered their rules officials since I've been watching golf anyways. So
right.
I don't know if they have the appetite to do that. Again, I think it's a multi-pronged issue that I don't think there's this one solution that figures it out. But I think if I were to be commissioner for a day and I was like, I knew that it was only going to be a day, I'd say, you know what? Tier all the players, take all the fast players, group them together, take all the sort of slow players, group them together, and then take all the slow players and group them together. And then the last tier, just give them all the terrible tee times. Just give them the bad draw. And if you want to climb out of it, start playing faster.
It's not a bad idea. Rest assured, by the way, these tour players, from my experience, are super motivated by when they're playing their rounds of golf. So,
but that's the thing, you know, but
they'll want to get out of those like terrible groupings real fast.
You know, if you put Cantley and JB Holmes together,
it would be an incredibly slow round of golf, you're saying?
Well, I mean, you know, they'd have no one else to blame.
You should almost like, you know what would be interesting, like an interesting experiment? Put the super slow guys in twosomes in between a bunch of threesomes and watch them still slow everybody down.
I mean, it'd be a good, like, I told you so moment, but man, I don't think I'd stick around and watch the end of that tournament.
I don't think many people will, to be honest. I mean, you got guys literally going to the event now just to time the fucking players. Like, imagine how ridiculous it's gotten at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, I think like the at the Masters, it was kind of like everyone was like, wow, that's real. That's a thing. Like, that's a reminder. I've seen this before. And then just to follow it up with last weekend, it's just insult to injury, you know?
Yeah, now it's getting real. Now it's getting serious. Like, now the execs are actually going to sit down and be like, okay, what the fuck are we going to start doing now?
The Fitzpatrick and Spieth, it was shot for shot for shot. It was the making of an incredibly exciting finish and playoff. And then all of a sudden you put a Cantley in there and it just took.
I mean, it's sad right that there was as much conversation about the slow play as there was about the actual.
Well, finish. That's what I'm saying. Like, even when his ball was up against the railway tie, pulled out every club in his bag, took a million practice swings. Like, come on, man, you're in the PGA. Like, come on.
Like, either take the drop or hit the shot.
Yeah, figure it out, man. Come on.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Okay, we will end it there. As always, love the convos with my boy, Matty. If you guys want to find us online, you can search us at either Nakhchivani Golf, which is our academy page, at Shkeen Golf, which is my Instagram page. You can find Matt at Fairway Golf, which is the cool merch coming out. Got a whole bunch of stuff coming. And yeah, as always, you can download our podcast pretty much anywhere, Apple, Spotify, How's My Hand Path. We will be continuing to share these wonderful conversations where we're basically just shitting on each other and the tour for an hour at a time. It seems like every week. And that's about it.
And if you guys, you want to finish with, if you guys prefer us with Brandon or without Brandon, please let us know.
Yeah, that's also true. I would like to say that with him is a better conversation, but this was fun, so who knows?
Yeah. Well, keep him on his toes.
All right. Thanks, everyone, and we shall see you guys next week.
Okay. Bye, all.